is Corolla Digital.
Allison Rosen. Hey everyone, it's me, Allison Rosen. This week on Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend, I sit down with Whitney actress Rae Seahorn, and we discuss growing up chunky, feeling inadequate as a woman, the size of Avril Lavigne's tushy, construction site bathrooms, Fantasy Island and Bewitched, and growing up with her father, who was a naval intelligence officer.
I had an aunt once that, very tipsy, was like, "Did you ever see this?" and showed me a picture of my dad dressed up as a woman in Russia before the Iron Curtain fell undercover.
Wow.
And it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty at all. It was very disturbing.
Subscribe to Allison Rosen is Your New Best Friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you. Goodbye.
Allison's your new best friend.
From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who likes to eat a lot of food alone. Hi, folks. Welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And I have to tell you something again. I know I've said this before. Maybe I say this every week, and it's true every week. No matter what kind of mood you're in, when I get in here into the studio, and after talking with the colonel and the doctor about things that I might do on the show, then I come in here, and when, boy, I'll tell you, when Dr. Chris plays that music, it makes me smile. And they get better every week. That orchestra, the Willie Burns Orchestra, and the Fanny Braun Dancers featuring boy tenor Jason Toma asking the musical question, does anyone else picture Larry in a suit and tie as he does the podcast? Which I think is remarkable. Colonel Jeff found that someone sent it in. In fact, it was Jason Toma who sent it in. And does anyone picture Larry in a suit and tie as he does the podcast? The reason it's remarkable is because I actually am in a suit and tie right now. And in fact, every single episode in a suit and tie, a different suit and tie and a very flashy suit and tie. And I just change into the sloppy clothes for the photo afterwards. So whatever you see on the website, right? That's right. I have to keep asking that every week. The website, of course, is LarryMillerPodcast.com. I know all this. It's only been, what, 109 years since we've been doing this? And that's the thing. I know what Jason means, that it would be nice to think of people doing that in a suit and tie. I'm pretty formal about all sorts of things. I used to be the one guy who would be wearing a suit and tie. And when I met my wife, when we were going out on dates, we would be, well, let me put it this way. We'd be going to places where no one wore a suit and tie. And but I did. I just thought it was more respectful and formal. I used to have all sorts of odd habits and that really didn't mix. I had I was with an agency once, and the head of it was my agent was a woman who, I don't want to name any names, they're great people. I really liked them all. And the head of it, who founded the whole agency, was a woman who was very well respected. And when we went out to lunch, we used to go to lunch with the two of them and somebody else. Whenever one of the women got up to go to the washroom, I would stand up at the table because I had seen that in a movie from 1934. And at one point, I'll never forget, the owner of this agency, as I was getting up, and I had done it before with her, and as I was getting up, she got up, and as I was getting up, she just sort of shot out at me, "Oh, sit down, Larry." And I did. I wasn't annoyed or offended, and she just didn't think it was the best kind of business for her. Because I had said to her, the first time she said to me, "Why do you keep standing up when I leave the table?" And I said, well, what was the truth at that time? I said, that's when a lady gets up to leave, a gentleman should always get up too, and all the fellas at the table, and when she gets back. So I think it was directly after that, the next time we went out to lunch, that I got the, "Oh, sit down, Larry." And come to think of it, I was no longer with that agency about 4 months later. And that they didn't even make a call or have a meeting of, we don't think you're working out. It was just, that's right, I got an offer on a part, and someone called me. That's right, the director called me up and said, yeah, we're going to give you this. Who's your agent? And I mentioned this, and he said, no, not anymore. And because they had called the agency, and can you imagine that? An agency who is being offered now money as a percentage on some salary an actor is going to get, when they still just said, no, he's not here anymore. It was fine with them, but that's just showbiz, I guess. But that's how I found out that I was no longer with them. Oh, a handful of weeks after she said, oh, sit down, Larry. And then she probably went back to her office and told all her friends or all the folks in the office there, okay, first guy we lose is him. That's got to happen. And I have, and no kidding, you know, I have nothing against them for that. I think that was fine. They're probably right. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing with men or women. I thought I was being polite, but it wasn't received that way. And oddly enough, that kind of manners will come up later on in the show. You'll see why. So in any case, thank you, Jason, for asking that. I think it's a terrific question. Does anyone else picture Larry in a suit and tie as he does the podcast? I am not in a suit and tie. In fact, I've used this, and Colonel Jeff was remembering when I got back from my secret spy work internationally. Oh, I mean the hospital. And then for the first few times we did the show again, well, I was wearing things that I just love, really comfy sweatpants and just bedroom slippers and a T-shirt and a sweatshirt. That was great stuff. And Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris didn't care, but my wife, you know, and God bless her, made a point of saying, as I left and as I came home, don't ever wear that again. And she said to me, in a great, joking, loving way, she said to me when I had to, oh, that's right, I was going to meet someone yesterday for lunch. I had a show business lunch meeting. And she said, okay, you know, do this, just have a great time. Remember, talk about the part and do this. And she said to me, and don't wear the sweatpants. And I said, well, I don't wear those anymore because I think, I mean, I'm trying to make you feel good about what I, not only what I wear, but what I don't wear. But you could see, as she said it, she wasn't kidding around. She thought, this guy might just be dumb enough to wear the sweatpants outfit to this gigantic show business lunch. So I didn't. And anyway, thank you, Jason, though. And Willie Burns is a great, that's a great name for the orchestra. And Fanny Braun is going to come up again. We made her the Fanny Braun dancers here, and she's going to come up again in this show, and you'll see why. And by Amazon. That's right, Amazon. We are brought to you by Amazon. They are our favorite sponsor, and they have a good deal for you because, as you know, and you do know this, anything in the world you want, anything you can that comes into your head, anything you can think of that you want, you can get on Amazon. You just go on to Amazon on the internet and buy everything in the world you want, right? Wrong! You don't! You don't! Stop that! Don't do that! Don't go to Amazon on the internet. What you do is go to us on the internet. You go to the LarryMillerPodcast.com. That's our webpage, which still sounds like shaving a haircut two bits to me. LarryMillerPodcast.com. And you go to our website, and there is a banner there that says Amazon. And you hit that banner, and then it takes you to Amazon. And you can get anything in the world you want as regular, as normal on Amazon. But this time, because you got to it off of our website, they send us a percentage of the money. And we're very happy from that. They're very happy because they sell more things. And you should be happy because you ordered all the things you want. Except, of course, an actual Amazon, which you can't get there. And we've said this every time. I love saying this because it's very important. If you do get an actual real-life Amazon from them, and she comes to your house, and she's a tall, muscular, gorgeous, very sexual woman, please do nothing. Call us first. Don't call the police. Call us first here. That's Colonel Jeff, Dr. Chris, and me. Call us. We will be right over, and we will test the Amazon for you. It's better that we do this. We've had experience. So don't complain. Don't call anyone else. Call us. That's what happens. That's what you should do. But please do go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. Click the Amazon flag and go to them. And thank you for doing that. And Amazon, thank you for sending us that dough. Just like, and speaking of which, just like PayPal. Shows you how smart I'm getting, by the way, as I write this down every single week on a giant legal pad. And I wrote down, not PayPal, I wrote down PenPal. And that's right, PenPal. And I said, I was sitting there with the colonel, I just said, that's not right, is it? It's not PenPal, is it? And he's a good soul, and we're friends. And he didn't say, look, stupid, you should know this by now. He said, look, Mr. Stupid, you should know this by now. But I that made me laugh. I thought, why is that wrong? It's not PenPal, is it? And he said, gently, but with humor, no, it's PayPal. Oh, that's right, PayPal. So in any case, we're very happy with what we're doing there, because on PayPal, what you do is you go out to a favorite bar in your area or a bar you've never been to in your area, and you find out what they charge for a drink. You don't know what they charge for a drink because you've never been there. So if you say, what do you charge for a drink? And whatever it is, it's $3 or $4 or $5, whatever it is for a drink, then send us enough for three drinks, one for each of us, and we'll let you know. I'll let you know as soon as we do something like go out, but we're very grateful, and it's going to be a big thank you whenever we can get off our butts and go to another giant fried chicken fest after having a couple of cocktails. In Suits, where we went to a barber shop and got a barber shave, which is, you know what? Why, that's almost as good as an Amazon herself. That's an actual Amazon. No, it's not. It's not almost as good as an Amazon at all. In any case, though, thank you very much. And that, by the way, that leads to my one of my favorite parts of the show every week now. It's time for the joke of the week. That's right. The joke of the week. The joke of the week that gives you something to laugh at when you hear it here and then tell your friends and family after you've heard it here. You may know some of these jokes anyway. And by the way, Colonel Jeff just pointed out to me, he went to, there's a site called the 100 Funniest Jokes of All Time. And that's not just, as he put it, that's not just a book where a comedian says, oh, here's 100 jokes, and whether they're good or not, he just throws them in there. This is something where people vote on them. And all the people who watch the site and go to the site will say, oh, here's what I thought of this joke, here's my favorite joke. And they'll see if anybody else writes in and says, oh, I like that joke too. I like that guy too. And he said to me, Colonel Jeff said to me, guess who was on that list? Guess who was number 68? And I originally thought, look, you're talking to a guy who says pen pal. You know, I mean, don't stump me with this. You can stump the band very easily with this. And he said, it's you. He said, you're number 68. I'm number 68. And like any decent comedian, the first thing I said was, oh, yeah, who's 67? But I was kidding. That was a solid 23% kidding. At any rate, it's very nice. It's very flattering because the joke I have on it is actually something that's from my act. It was the first handful of years I was a comic. That the bit I used to do was whenever you're watching a boxing match or after the boxing match, you know, where, and the guy's getting $2 million or $5 million for the boxing match. I think everyone has an uncle like this, that I used to have an Uncle Lou who would always say, you know, for that kind of money, I'd fight him. And I was, you know, I think I might have actually said this once. I turned to him and said, you know, that's not a bad idea, because I think that's what people really want. They want to spend $150 a ticket to go to a boxing match where a chubby, bald carpet salesman from Queens gets hit once in the face and cries. And so that's kind of neat. Thank you for the folks who wrote into this to the service about that. I don't know what it is. I barely know there's a flag that says Amazon. But Colonel Jeff found this, and that's how we got this joke this week. He printed these out for me, and, you know, they're all pretty good jokes, and I think this one's pretty good, too. So here it comes. a young married couple moves into their first house, a new house, the first house they get. And one day, the husband comes home from work, and his wife says, honey, you know, in the upstairs bathroom, one of the pipes is leaking. Could you fix it? And the husband immediately shoots back, what do I look like, Mr. Plumber? And a few days go by, he comes home from work, and his wife says, honey, the car won't start. I think it needs a new battery. Could you change it for me? And he says, what do I look like, Mr. Goodwrench? And then he goes out and, you know, just cracks a beer for himself. Another, I just threw that in because to me, that would be the one way, wow, you show really an argumentative side. You say that, then you pop the cap off a beer bottle and you don't pick it up from the counter. I can't see living like that. I've seen that in movies too, where they just leave it on the counter. I can't get that. At any rate, he says, oh, what do I look like, Mr. Goodwrench? Another few days go by, and it's raining really pretty hard. The wife finds a leak in the roof, and she says, honey, there's a leak in the roof. Would you please fix it? And he says, what do I look like, Bob Villa? And the next day, the husband comes home again from work, and he sees the roof is fixed. So is the plumbing. So is the car. He asks his wife what happened. She said, oh, I had a handyman come in and fix them. And he says, great. Well, oh, how much is that going to cost me? And his wife says, nothing. He said he'd do it for free if I either baked him a cake or slept with him. And the husband gets a little nervous and says, well, what kind of cake did you make? And she says, what do I look like, Betty Crocker? I like that, and the colonel and the doctor like that. It's just a great, it's close to a Shaggy Dog story where you get to fill out the images a little bit, but that's pretty good. That's pretty clever. So turns out, well, I guess whether it's true or not, she got him back. And that's a great part of jokes too. Is it true or not? It almost doesn't matter. What's true is it sets up an image that makes us laugh. That's a deep truth. To me, I like that truth a lot. So that was our joke of the week, which leads into another favorite part of the show for me, something I've always wanted to do. This is our poetry corner. That's right, it's the poetry corner. Well, I used to say, even when I was a kid and throughout life, I didn't know I was going to be in show business. But once I got into show business, I thought, you know, if I ever get a show, a radio show, a TV show, a theatrical show. Well, like this, like talking to you now. And if I ever did, I said, you know what? I'd like poetry to be part of it. I'd like to read a poem once a week on the show. So that's what I do now because we like that. It's a good feeling. Poetry is just so enriching. It makes you think and it makes you sit there and just, it's a different way to look at life. It's like finally looking at a sunset and saying, hey, you know what? Folks are right. This is nice to watch. And plus, it's a sunset. We can go right out and get a drink. Because I think that's what people do when they say after a sunset. Sometimes after a sunrise. But this is a good poem. I love reading lyrical or romantic poets. And this is the great John Keats, K-E-A-T-S, who's an English poet. And, a sad life, a tragic life, because he died very young. He was born in 1795, and he died in 1821. He was 25 years old, and he died of tuberculosis. And he was very sick for several years there before going. And he didn't really have, he was known, he got some success, and some people were starting to say, you know, this guy is good. This guy is a very good wordsmith and a very good artist with words. And yet he never really made any money to speak of. He was always afraid that he was going to be foreclosed wherever he lived. And in those days, if he was English, wherever he lived meant, well, where are you going? Luxembourg? You know, you could go anywhere and live there. And he got sick ultimately and died in Rome, but with his closest friend by there, Severne was that guy's name. And the reason, I'll tell you, I'll read you this now. It's a poem that's, well, I thought wonderful, and it's not, well, I'll just read it to you. And there are a couple of words in it we actually looked up and couldn't find, and I'd like to read you this one now. It's by John Keats, and it's called a drought of sunshine. Hence Burgundy, Claret, and Port, away with old Hock and Madeira. Too earthy ye are for my sport. There's a beverage brighter and clearer. Instead of a pitiful rummer, my wine overbrims a whole summer. My bowl is the sky, and I drink at my eye till I feel in the brain a Delphian pain. Then follow, my Caius, then follow. On the green of the hill we will drink our fill of golden sunshine till our brains intertwine with the glory and grace of Apollo, god of the meridian and of the east and west. To thee my soul is flown, and my body is earthward pressed. It is an awful mission, a terrible division, and leaves a gulf austere to be filled with worldly fear. Aye, when the soul is fled too high above our head, affrighted do we gaze after its airy maze, as doth a mother wild when her young infant child is in the eagle's claws. And is not this the cause of madness? God of song, thou bearest me along through sights I can scarce bear. Oh, let me share with the hot lyre and thee the staid philosophy. Temper my lonely hours, and let me see thy bowers more unalarmed. Now, I think, and we thought here, that's a beautiful poem with great words. And by the way, a quick thing. I said pitiful rummer on the fifth line up there instead of a pitiful rummer. The actual word is, and we thought somebody out there, one of you listening, would know what this means or know where to look it up, because it's written instead of a piriful rummer, P-I-R-I-F-U-L. And to quote Colonel Jeff, well, Larry, piriful is not on the internet. And we tried looking it up. Well, he tried looking it up. I tried sitting there, pretending I was watching. And you know what? So we don't know what that means. If one of you does, or one of you can find it, and I have a gigantic dictionary sitting on my desk at home. If I can remember when I get home, I'm going to look it up there first and see what it means. A piriful rummer. My wine overbrims a whole summer. And this struck me as one of those poems that, boy, a guy who was never touched and filled in life the way he wanted to be, with great artistic success and with love. He never really got the love he wanted. He cared for someone so much, and he did, as best he could, think he loved her. But they were very close friends, and they wrote to each other. And that's why, by the way, her name was Fanny Braun. And that's why it seemed like a good idea to name the dancers after her today. Because you know what? It's a lovely poem. It's very moving to hear someone who put those words down in that fashion, and that we can hear them today, so much later, and that he is, well, you know what? That he's in heaven with the woman he loved, although perhaps she's with the guy she ultimately married, and he's there in heaven with some guy named Ira, because it's just there's somebody on the same cloud, and it doesn't work out the way you plan. But you know what? It's very moving to think that maybe they're together forever, John Keats and Fanny Braun. And you know what? The best part of entertainment, the best part of performing for people like you, and the best part of people getting a chance to listen is that, you know what? For just now, for today, for reading that poem, they are together forever. And I sure hope they are in the real world, the real next world. So that is our Poetry Corner for the week, which actually fills into the question of love, actually fills into what seemed a good idea that I wanted to do this week for the Magic Movie Moment. because in the magic movie moment, a guy out there, thank you, Anthony David Guidici, or Guidice, or Guidice. It's G-U-I-D-I-C-E. Anthony sent in a great clip from one of the great movies, one of the greats, and one of my favorites. I've never had a list of 5 or 100 favorite ones, but this is on it. The Maltese Falcon, or The Maltese Falcon. And it's a great movie. It's about the detective Sam Spade in Los Angeles in, well, the late 1930s or through the 1940s. It's just a great era. It stars Humphrey Bogart and Mary Astor. And, oh, the great Peter Lorre. He's so good in everything he's in. And what a magnificent actor he was. And this was, oh, well, people, for goodness sake, Ward Bond was in this. And Elisha Cook Jr., you'll recognize from so many movies. They're all so good in this. And this was also Sidney Greenstreet's first movie, the first thing he was in. Sidney Greenstreet, great, great actor. He worked with Bogart many times for so many movies. And but Sidney Greenstreet was a great actor. And what a natural feel he had in this part. They were all so good together. And, well, Anthony was nice enough to send one of the great spots of Bogart in the movie, delivering a series of lines that he just kind of blasts right out. He just goes, pop, 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 pop. Not too fast, but he just says the words. And I had a chance to remember. It brought me back to a time when I had a chance to be on the show Law & Order several times. And it was just a great experience, and I loved it so much. And I had a chance to get to know Jerry Orbach, who has passed on since, it's a couple of years now. What a great artist he was. Also, what a great guy in show business. He was just such an interesting guy. And what a fella to listen to. And we like to chat to each other. And he was telling me a lesson of sorts. Not of sorts, it's a lesson in acting. He was telling me about how people used to speak and the kind of pacing they used, and he brought up Humphrey Bogart as an example. And he said, if you go, for instance, to watch him in the Caine Mutiny, to watch him say some of those lines, and that's how I remembered with specific clarity. It was always in the strawberries. They were there. There was a duplicate key, and there was a speech he made, and he repeated the speech, the whole speech, and he could do a good Bogart imitation, but he could do it rhythmically. And you just remembered that's right, this guy didn't overpause. He said, can you imagine any actor today doing that speech or that part? He said people would be gnashing their teeth. The actor would take pauses. He would look up as if at the sun. He would pause as if he was about to cry. He would try to find the words instead of, and this is just the great old Spencer Tracy lesson of acting, just say the words and don't bump into the furniture. And you know what? It's a great lesson, and oh, did Bogart do that well. And it reminded me not only of that movie, not only the great Maltese Falcon, a great, great movie, but it reminded me of something that is one of my magic movie moments. One of those times you just look forward to, and it seems to work every time. And in this case, it works doubly or triply because it's at the end of the movie after everything is settled in its way. And I'm not going to spoil anything. If you don't know that movie, if you haven't seen The Maltese Falcon, see it. It's a very, very good movie. And it reminds you of something you never even knew, you never even learned, that people speak in a different way. And they don't take time to be sad over certain things. They just say things that have to be done. And at the end of the movie, Mary Astor is going to be going with the police, and she's going to be in prison as they leave the apartment there. They could only two of them could fit into those old elevators. So she went into the elevator with the police lieutenant, and that left Bogart and Ward Bond, who another policeman who were going to walk down the stairs. But what they show in the movie, but they don't try too hard to show it. Really, only Bogart notices this, and we notice it. I noticed it every time from the first time I saw this movie to now, that as she gets in the elevator, and he does love her, and he did love her, but he made the right decision to turn her in, and as she gets in, the old mechanical spreading elevator door, the way they used to have them, I know you know what I mean, and as the policeman pulls that shut, we see, because of the light in the hallway, we see she's standing there, and suddenly it looks like she has bars over her whole face and body. Now, they're just there from the elevator gate, but Bogart knows, and we know, that's the way she's going to look in prison. And it's one of those moments where it's, oh, it comes really at the end of a wonderful movie. But that small moment, and I know, I don't know this, but it had to have been done specifically. It had to have been chosen. And it works just perfectly because it's not overdone. It wasn't done, it wasn't hit too hard. It just happens. And with the little sad music there, we notice Bogart sees it and Bogart gets it. And you and I see it and we get it. And no one else, including Mary Astor, knows about it, and she doesn't get it. So that's one of my magic movie moments. And it brought me back to a good story that is one of the 12 building blocks of our show here. And it's a story about seeing that movie, not for the first time. Wait a minute, I think it might have been for the first time. When I was still in school, my sister was newly married, and they had a small house in New Jersey. And I was off, and I was living in New York with some friends from school, and living also out at my parents' house where I grew up on Long Island. And my sister said to me, she and her husband, Steve, were going away for a week somewhere to do something. They didn't have kids yet. And she said, why don't you stay at our place in New Jersey? And I'd stayed there before. I'd just sleep on the couch. And it's not a fold-out couch, but it's just a couch. It was a great couch to sleep on because someone let you. And she said, why don't you stay with us? Spend a week at our place, and you can cook anything you can want. And you can just go in and do your writing there and think about doing shows there. And I thought, okay, well, I guess that's a good idea, I guess. And I brought out the way a young single man packs, which is, well, you have your sneakers and just maybe an extra pair of underwear and, well, a toothbrush and things like that and things to shave. And I had the best dinner watching the Maltese Falcon there at their place that I've ever had. And here's why, here's what it was. And the best dinner in the world, you're alone. There's no one in this place. It's a small house, and they put a lot of their love and life into it. And it's a nice house. As you know, a house doesn't have to be Beverly Hillbillies mansion to be really nice. And her place is pretty nice, and I was going to stay on the couch. And what I did that night for that movie, I saw Maltese Falcon. Oh, I'm going to watch that. And what I did was I took their car. They said that was okay. I could borrow it. And I drove into town, and I went to Kentucky Fried Chicken and got a bucket of it. And I mean a bucket. I don't mean the, gee, if you want some extra, you want to get the small bucket. I mean I got the bucket of chicken, the one that you can normally tie around a horse's head, that size bucket. And I got a six-pack of beer and took those two things. That was the dinner. And I took those things back to their house there and sat. It was not a big living room, a small one, and sat on the couch, and I put towels down on the couch. And I took my clothes off just to get down to my boxer shorts and T-shirt and sweat socks, because you don't want to get anything on your own clothes or on their couch. And I put towels down on the coffee table, which is a good coffee table because it was high enough to eat off of. I know you know what I mean. It's not a coffee table where you want to see a book of the Chapels of Florence. You know, it's not that kind of thing. And you, no one needs to see that anyway, because well, they may be nice chapels, but no one's ever going to actually look at that book on the coffee table. So I put towels down on a nice high coffee table, and then I put all the and then I put an extra just for need. I put one wet towel on the left and one dry towel on the right, because this is how I was going to eat. I'm all alone. I'm a single man. I'm in my sister's place, and this is how I'm going to do it. I turned that movie on, and this is not an eating contest. It's not as if, well, you're going to eat, like a TV show, 8, 9 pieces of chicken and see how much before you get stuffed. What you do is you eat, you have a couple of pieces of chicken, and then you can stop for a while if you want, and then you have a couple more and a couple more. And maybe, just maybe, you can get through an entire bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is actually what happened. I made it through that bucket. It, you know, over the course of the movie and the news, I made it through that bucket and through that six-pack of beer. And I'll tell you what, if anyone ever says, what's the greatest meal you ever had? Now, I've been lucky enough, and I'm sure, you know, you've been lucky enough, too, to go to nice restaurants at a certain point. And I'm not a complete idiot. I know that they're nice restaurants, but they don't mean an awful lot to me. If you're going to a French place where, and that's fine. I know people love to cook this and they love to eat it and they love to watch shows about it. I'm not making fun of it. I'm saying I'm glad you do and I'm glad it's there. But I've been, once we went to, you know, with our friends Michael and Janice, we went to, well, a fancy French place that's no longer open around here. It was a Beverly Hills place and everyone went there. And you get to have they made, you know, pretty good drinks. And if you order I was drinking Scotch Neat that night, and those were pretty beefy drinks. So if you have 3 or 4 of those, you've done something. And then we got the meal there that was their taste meal, or the prefix dinner, you know, which is 7 courses. And, you know, these aren't big courses. They make it, each one has the little eggshell cut in half, and they put a little of, you know, what they have, something tartare, and with a little sauce, and everyone can say, oh, isn't this good? This is delicious. And I'm glad my wife and Janice loved it, and because that's why you go, so that someone's going to love it there. So they said to me, how do you like it? I like it. It's fine. It's great. It's good. I'm glad we're here. And, well, you're there a long time. That's a 3-hour meal, and it was very expensive. It was not insane, but really one step short of insane. The point being that if you do that, that's fine. If someone said, is that your favorite meal? No, it's not. And how about this one over here that was in the fabulous German restaurant that had a band in one room that was called an Umpa band, and you could do waltzing with it and strut around, and then they bring huge platters of food. Is that your favorite meal? For a variety of reasons, no. But that's all right. But my favorite meal, I'll tell you what, was that bucket of chicken and that 6-pack of beer and that underwear and those towels and that movie Maltese Falcon. Or Maltese Falcon, and I think that might have been the first time I noticed the bars on Mary Astor's face at the end. And, boy, I'll tell you what, that's a good thing to notice and a good thing to clean up from, because everything could be thrown out. It was just cans from the beer and the bucket from the chicken, and that can just be thrown out, and then you can just wash yourself up. And in their bathroom, it's just things on your hands and face. And then you can put all the towels in the dirty laundry. And that was a heck of a meal. And you know what? It reminded me of another meal with my sister and her husband, because they had a friend there. My sister had a friend from college who was a model, and she was married, and they were good friends, and they were all nice people. They were good friends. But they were very unaffected. They lived in New Jersey, too. They were just really decent people. And her friend, the model, had a younger sister who was in college. And they thought, why don't we get her together with Larry and maybe they'll go out? I'm sure you've heard or witnessed those kinds of things before. And she was a very nice young woman, very nice. Everyone was very nice. And the 6 of us went out to dinner at a local place in New Jersey there, and it was a nice, quiet place to be, nothing fancy. But see, what happened was that, you know, a story is going to be either good or bad when it starts with, okay, what happened was this. Well, what happened was this. I didn't eat anything really that day because I wanted to have a good appetite. You know, if you're going to go for a nice meal, you want to have some space in there so you can really, well, tear into it. And so when we got there and they said, would you like a drink? I said, so I got some, well, I got a martini. And then the waiter said, well, I was going to get a second one. The waiter said to me, you know what? If you want, I can make you a pitcher of these and you can just have the pitcher at the table and just pour yourself one whenever you want. And I said, well, what maybe most of you would have said, which is, that is a great idea. That's a terrific idea. And by the way, no one else was drinking. My sister and her husband and her friend and her husband and the younger sister, nobody's having anything. But I had, well, I had a lot. I had a lot. And sure, you have a piece of celery along the way with the salad dip, and but you're really not soaking up what you're putting in from that pitcher. And how do I know that? Well, here's how. Because I'm sitting next to this nice young woman. She was really pretty. And she was wearing pantyhose, dark blue pantyhose. And boy, she was really nicely dressed and very, very pretty. And I notice that she has a hole in the pantyhose, in the side of her leg, along the thigh. And her leg was crossed over that leg. And I saw the hole in the pantyhose, which was just, it wasn't a big hole. It was like two pencil points. It was large enough to be visible as a hole. And so I did what I think anyone would do. I, without saying anything, I stuck my right finger into it and began to enlarge the hole. Now, I hadn't said anything. By the way, I'm not like this. Well, but I did it. And I was, you know, at the time, I guess I was 20 or 22. And I started to make the hole larger. I didn't take the finger out. I just kept kind of weaving it around sort of, you know, just to make it larger with the finger in there. Now, at this point, I'm sure my sister was saying, Larry, what are you doing? But I didn't hear or wasn't aware of that or didn't care. And I made it bigger and I got two fingers in there on the side of the leg there. And then I got my whole hand in there. And that's when, and by the way, everyone's not, these are really nice people. They weren't horrified. They weren't shocked. They just said, wow, your brother's out of his mind. So my sister said to her husband, you know, Steve, do me a favor, get Larry out of the room. Take Larry into another room and, you know, straighten him out, put the fear of God into him or something. And he does that. The next thing I know, I'm waking up on their couch where I had the Kentucky Fried Chicken, the same thing, that same couch. I'm waking up the next morning there and wow, that was a big leap in time from those events. And I'm, same thing, wearing the boxer shorts, T-shirt, white socks, and I smell something cooking in the kitchen. And so I just kind of pad into the kitchen. It wasn't a big place. And I see my sister's at the stove and her back's to me and she's wearing a bathrobe and she's cooking some kind of, I don't know, sausage or bacon or something or other. And she's cooking with a flipper. And I said, oh, hi, Shay, what's up? You know, good morning. And she turns, I'm feeling a little fuzzy. She turns and we're kind of pretty close. We're only about 4 feet away. And she points that flipper right at my face. And she said, first of all, if you ever hit Steve again. Now, how good can a story get when that's the first line? First of all, if you ever hit Steve again, and my mouth kind of opened because I'm no tough guy. I'm not like that. I said, I what? And she said, and when she told me, I did remember. And he took me into the next room, which was another kind of eating room. And he stood me against one of the walls there. It's just not a fancy place. And he's just said to, hey, what are you doing? What's going on here? You know, cause you got to this or what, something like that. And I didn't want to be there with him. And I started to move and he put a hand up and he said, and he just kind of put it against my chest to sort of hold me against the wall for a second. And I'm a lefty and I punched him and I'm, look, again, I'm not a boxer. I'm not tough, but you can put some good mustard into it when you're up against a wall, and a sane human doesn't expect to be hit anyway. And I hit him. I hit him pretty good. And what happened after that was I sort of, well, nothing bad or worse happened after that. Said, well, sorry, look, you know, and I said, you know, I said something. I was pretty mashed up. I mean, I needed to go back and get on that couch, which is kind of more or less what happened. They had dinner, by the way. They had, because they were out and they had ordered dinner. I just sort of sat, I don't even know where I was. I didn't sit there. Maybe they put me in the car. I still don't know. You know what? I have to ask my sister. But the point is, that came into my head. I was reminded of that as something that happened from a magic movie moment where I slept on that couch. And as Colonel Jeff just reminded me, that for the start of the second season on Mad Men, the TV show Mad Men, and Don Draper, who, as you know, that's the name of the character of the really handsome guy, and John Hamm, right? And in the show, Matt Weiner, that's his show. He created the show. He writes the show. Well, they have writers there also, but I mean, that's his show, and it's the texture that he makes. And someone said to him, because to start the second season, it showed him, he's lost his wife. Don Draper's and his wife got divorced, and now instead of living at the fabulous manor house in whatever it is, Connecticut or something, where they were living, and he's on his own now. He's living in a kind of a rundown apartment in Manhattan, and it shows him coming home in quotes from having a few drinks into this kind of low grade apartment there, and he opens up, as Colonel Jeff called it, the beanie weenies. You know, he's eating now. He just opens up. It's a little hot dogish kind of food, the little ones, and you can kind of just reach in and pop one into your mouth, and he's got a couple of cans of that. And Matt said, he was asked about it, whether that was on Oprah or something like that, and she asked him, she said, wow, that was so touching, because at that point, you're thinking, oh, he's really fallen so hard. And Matt began to say, he said afterwards, he realized, wow, this is so weird. All the women I spoke to thought it was so sad that he wound up that way, but the reason I wrote it like that is that, to me, this was guy heaven. This was, especially for a guy like Don Draper. Hey, he's all alone. He doesn't have to deal with anyone yelling at him. He can get down to his underwear if he wants and just eat beanie weenies with his fingers. That's a good day for an ex-married man. And so, well, not in that life, not to me. But you know what? It did fit in with remembering. But that night, on my sister's couch, watching the Maltese Falcon, and that night, eating that entire bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken and having a six-pack of beer, that just might have been the best meal I ever had. So I hope you have one, too. Let us know, obviously, if you do. Please keep letting us know about poems or about jokes you like. And as always, remember, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. That is still as true as anything I know. I hope it is for you. Have a good week and we'll see you next time.